Welcome to What Goes Up, a weekly markets podcast. My name is Mike Regan. I'm a senior editor at Bloomberg.
And I'm Valdana Hayek, a reporter on the Cross Asset team.
And this week on the show, well, a few weeks ago, we talked about the U-turn that had happened in markets with some of the moves triggered by optimism about vaccines and the reopening of the economy reversing and going the other way. Well, strap on your chin straps because it's all going back the other way now. Value and cyclical stocks are outperforming once again, and the yield curve is once again steepening. So what's going on? Is the old new again? And can we expect these trends to continue? We'll get into it with Chris Gaffney, who's the head of world markets at TIAA Bank.
And of course, we'll close out the show with the craziest thing we saw in markets this week. And remember, if you see anything crazy, give us a call on the podcast hotline at 646-324-3490. Leave us a voicemail and maybe we'll play your craziest thing on the show.
Well, Donna, one thing that's crazy is this weather. This is the type of weather where an old guy like me is forced to ask the age-old question. You ready?
I'm ready.
Hot enough for you?
Well, I was actually, just before we started chatting, I was reading a story from one of our colleagues, and one of the quotes really struck me was about the heat wave that's hitting New York City this week where I live. And it said, all the cement is going to radiate heat indoors. It'll be life-threatening situation, which is...
Oh, my goodness. Well, you just took this to a very dark place.
Sorry, I didn't mean to.
I was hoping for some lighthearted banter, and now...
Well, the cement that's going to radiate heat indoors, is that's the part that struck me. I probably shouldn't have read the second part. Didn't mean to scare you.
Well, I like that your answer was grounded in well-sourced reporting there. Nothing off the top of the head for Valdana. She comes with the actual reporting. My secret is, and Valdana, this is something as a Jersey native you'll appreciate. My secret is Italian ice. I can take any type of weather as long as the Italian ice store is open. And we got a good new one in town. So I don't think you've got as good of an Italian ice selection as we do here in New Jersey and New York.
Are you talking about Rita's? New Jersey.
Rita's is good. I'm talking about, they're actually a friend of the family, DeCosmos. They only have two stores. They've been making Italian ice, or as we call in Philly, Wooder ice.
Wooder.
W-O-O-D-E-R, mm-hmm. Wooder ice. I know, no one knows what you're talking about, but in Philly they do. 105 years they've been making Italian ice in Elizabeth, and now new store in Metuchen. I didn't mean this to be a plug for DeCosmos, but so be it. My local friends will laugh because I'm kind of obsessed with them. I've got a bit of a Italian ice problem, but in this heat, it's the best remedy. Even if, I don't know, what the concrete's going to start melting on us or something, you're telling me?
Honestly, you have me sold on the wooder ice.
Wooder ice. All right. Well, even with the melting concrete, that should be enough to keep us cool. But let's bring in our guest. First time on the show. As I said, he's from TIAA Bank. His name is Chris Gaffney. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks much. I appreciate you the invitation, and I look forward to the discussion today.
Cool. Yeah, Chris, I'm going to start off with an easy question. I just want to know, I'm not very familiar with the world markets department of TIAA Bank. I'm guessing that some Forex services, that type of thing. Talk us through what your group does and what your role is there.
So we offer individual investors the ability to invest into currencies, both for transactional purposes and for investments, and then precious metals. So I run a currency and precious metals desk. It's kind of unique. You know, the institutions play in that field a lot, but typically individual investors, have a tougher time finding the availability of currency investments in precious metals. So we're big on diversification, obviously. So we think they're good asset classes. And I've been in this doing this job for, I guess, 30 plus years, 35 years now. So been in it a while.
Still a rookie, huh?
Yeah.
And Chris, I was going to ask you, you and I chat from time to time, and I really enjoy our conversations. I always turn to you when something's going on with markets and I need an explainer. And so I was hoping you could sort of start us out just giving us a sense of how you're making sense with what's going on with the stock market. Because coming into August, I remember there was tons of fear about the sort of seasonal volatility factor, and August was supposed to be a much choppier month. And here we are. We're at record highs. It's been sort of tranquil. So how are you making sense of everything that's going on?
It's been great markets. I mean, and it all goes back to the economic environment here in the U.S. I mean, this is just a fantastic economic environment for companies. And stock performance always goes back to the earnings, to company earnings. So, you know, we've got low interest rates. We've got pent up demand. And then you've got extremely strong consumer and corporate balance sheets. So all those add up to markets that are, you know, I use the word slogging higher because it's not a dramatic rise that we've seen. Certainly the numbers are pretty eye-popping when you compare it to, you know, the depths of the fall. But, you know, we're just marching higher, continually marching higher. And something you brought up about choppiness, we expected a lot more choppiness in these markets. I mean, we thought volatility was going to be pretty high. With all the push pulls that we're seeing, but you know we've really just seen a slow and steady increase in these markets, almost boring at times. I hate to use that because now we'll see a dramatic swing, but you know they've just been marching higher.
Well, one choppiness I'm guessing your team must have had their eye on was that plunge in gold to start the week. Well, even before the week started, I guess what was it Sunday night?
Yeah, the precious metals prices, you know, conspiracy theorists will tell you that, you know, they always move on the weekends because the markets are, you know, there's less liquidity out there and the big moves always come on the weekends. And quite honestly, we couldn't figure out exactly what drove that drop. Maybe it was the jobs data, you know, the coming in stronger and looking, you know, the focus of investors shifted from a worry about, you know, about a slowdown to back to strong labor, strong GDP growth. And that's not necessarily positive for the precious metals. You know, gold is seen as a risk hedge and along with inflation hedge. So good, strong markets, good, strong labor growth probably weighed on the price of gold.
And Chris, you just mentioned you guys had thought that the market was going to be a lot more choppy. There's so many superlatives we can say about this market. One that has been standing out for me in recent days is, you know, we're up more than 30% from the previous peak that we had reached before the pandemic. And so I'm just wondering why it's been so hard to call what's been going on with the market and with stocks just continuing to, I forget the word you used, trudge higher.
Yeah, slog higher.
Slog.
You know, I think it comes back to, you know, we expected choppiness because we're in unprecedented times, obviously. And when you're trying to project where the markets are going to go or even economic data, you typically rely on models. And the economic models, when you have the dramatic shutdown of an economy and absolutely stopping everything, and then the fairly rapid recovery, those models just don't work. So, you know, trying to project where we're going to be, trying to even free cash flows. I mean, you know, when companies have to shut down and then start back up, you know, the base effect on is one item that, you know, the numbers were so bad that, of course, they're going to be really good on the recovery. But another thing is the comparisons. You just can't make those comparisons, and it's kind of thrown the models out of whack. So projections, I think most people thought economists weren't going to be able to really dial in where we were going. But I'm glad to see we've been marching steadily higher.
You know, Chris, I'm wondering the perspective of some of your clients who might be internationally focused. You know, obviously, one of the big themes we heard a lot about earlier this year and sort of at the beginning of the year was a lot of people were bracing for sort of an outperformance of international equities outside of the U.S. To some degree, we've kind of seen that. You know, I'm looking at the Bloomberg screen here of developed markets. U.S. is about 11th place out of 24. You know, there's a lot of European markets, Austria, Sweden, Netherlands, France, Denmark doing better. What's kind of the sentiment at this stage of the year in the game? Has that bullishness for sort of the rest of the world worn off?
I don't think so. You know, personally, I'm still bullish on Europe. And it's really about the reopening. You know, the U.S. was first to really reopen. Well, China was first, but then the U.S. came in and reopened. And, you know, with our vaccine policy, our vaccinations, although it's stalled out now, we were able to reopen more quickly than Europe. Europe was a little slower to reopen. So, you know, we probably hit that reopening surge faster than Europe. And I still think Europe's going to come back. And I think there's opportunities. Also, valuations just favor some other markets besides the U.S. And then on top of all of that, you've got the dollar. And you know, anytime you invest internationally, unless you hedge your currency exposure, you're also investing in the currency of that market that you're investing in. So, you know, the dollar going into this was very strong. It got even stronger at the beginning of the pandemic because we saw a lot of safe haven buying of the U.S. dollar. International investors came to the dollar, came to treasuries. We're still seeing them. The 10-year market yesterday was bought by central banks. So and outside investors. So we're still seeing some of that. The dollar declined over last year, but so far this year, it's starting to move higher again. So I still think that we're going to see a dollar decline and mainly due to interest rate differentials. I do think there's opportunities overseas still, although the U.S. market is still, I think, going to march higher.
And speaking of international markets, I think you and your team are favorable towards China. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm wondering if you think what's been happening and playing out with China over the last couple of weeks really is more of a localized event or maybe something that could potentially spill over into other parts of the world. And how are you thinking about the Chinese markets?
I think the yuan or renminbi, whichever you want to call it, the Chinese currency, is still a good buy. I think that it's a currency that will continue to perform if the government of China lets it. I think that the Chinese markets, I mean it's the second largest, by some measures the largest economy. The Delta variant is certainly probably having an impact there, and so we could see some slowdown. But specifically on the regulation, I think it's, you know, you can look at it two ways. It's either the Chinese government being heavy-handed and trying to get control of their economy, which in a way, you know, you understand that governments want to control what's going on in their economy. But, you know, are they going to go too far and try to take it back into the communist? I don't believe that. I think that they'll continue to walk this tightrope between capitalism and communism and try to keep their markets free and open as much as they are. You could argue that they're not. But I think the regulation is just a sign of a maturing economy and a maturing market. They know that in order to truly take their place among the world stage, investors have to rely and trust on economic data, trust on company reports, trust that there's no fraud, if you will. And so some of the regulations that they're passing are actually positive. And I think a sign that they are trying to, you know, mature that market and trying to be able to give investors confidence. Now, obviously, it's caused the opposite impact. Investors have worried that they're going to come in and maybe take control of certain industries. And that's certainly a concern and could grow into something bigger. But right now, I think the Chinese economy continues to do very well, growing at a good clip. And as long as they don't get too heavy handed, I think it will continue. They've got just huge consumer demand in China, got good exports into the rest of Asia and the U.S. and Europe. So as the U.S. and Europe recovers, I think China continues to do well.
Yeah, the regulation, I mean, that's made all the headlines, all these, every day you wake up to a new sort of crackdown on some industry in China. And to me, that strikes me as, at least for now, predominantly a domestic risk to, say, Chinese assets, you know, equities especially. maybe to some degree to the corporate bond market. But one thing I read this week out of China that kind of struck me as maybe something that the rest of the world needs to worry about is the credit expansion. Credit in China growing at sort of the weakest pace since the height of the pandemic. And I know this is something that a lot of internationally focused investors look at, is the credit impulse in China as sort of a symbol of, you know, for years, we've all been focused on exports out of China. But you have to start thinking about that domestic demand, the imports into China, that consumer demand, like you talked about. Is credit expansion in China anything that you keep your eye on? Is it any, you know, does this slowdown worry you at all?
Yeah, it certainly does, because obviously the world runs on credit. Consumers especially run on credit. So, you know, a slowdown would mean or would signal maybe a possible slowdown in the overall economy. Some of that is due to, though, them reining in some of the credit markets and tightening down control on some of the credit that was going on there. So, you know, a slowdown isn't necessarily really concerning to me right now, but certainly keeping an eye on it. And it absolutely is something we monitor across the global economy. It's one of the things that drives currency, obviously, and demand for currency. So certainly something we monitor.
And just to bring us back to the U.S. and speaking of consumers, my team and I were looking at some research reports of just consumer behavior and credit card spending and Apple mobility data and some of those things just over the last week, over the last 2 weeks with the Delta variant. And it's sort of a mixed picture right now. You know, you have reopenings, obviously, but then at the same time, mask mandates in certain areas and so on. So how should we be thinking about the Delta variant, especially as it relates to the market?
So, yeah, I think the Delta variant is really the largest risk to the markets right now. And, you know, as we see hospitalizations climb, although, you know, they seem to be peaking now, it's certainly something that concerns the market. Now, you know, I think Southwest recently announced that their bookings are down because of the Delta variant. And if we start to see restrictions, more restrictions and not, I don't think we're going to get the lockdowns. I just don't think the public's going to go that route. They're going to, you know, we've seen in St. Louis, where I live, a big rise in COVID, and Missouri was one of the big hot states. So, you know, we're starting to wear masks again and starting some of those. But the more harsher lockdowns and closings, I don't think we're going to get there. But it's certainly a risk. And, you know, it's something that we're going to have to continue to deal with. And, you know, the booster may be good, or just getting those vaccination rates up, I think, is the key. And hopefully we'll see that increase.
You know, Chris, I wanted to get back to that notion of FX. You know, you made a great point that obviously when you know, take an equity position in an overseas market, you're taking on that FX risk too. And it's been a pretty interesting year for the dollar. You know, I'm looking at sort of the dollar versus all the major G10 currencies. It's up pretty strongly against all of them on the year. But it's been kind of a wild ride. You know, the looking at the Bloomberg Dollar Index, it, you know, started the first, say, quarter of the year very strong. Then it came back down the sort of flat line. Now it's back up again near the highs of the year. I'm wondering, you know, I always think of that what they call the dollar smile theory, you know, that a dollar does real well sort of in when the world's going to hell and everything's risk off. But then it also does really well when, you know, things are going well, but the U.S. seems to be doing even better than the rest of the world. Is it that latter part that we're seeing now in the dollar strength? And walk us through kind of what you think has been pushing and pulling the dollar around this year.
Well, this year, yeah, it's definitely about the rebound and the U.S., the strong gains we saw in the U.S. That attracts investors. It attracts international investors. And of course, to buy the stock market in the U.S., they have to buy dollars. So, I think it's all about the strength we've seen so far this year is all about the equity performance and investors coming into the U.S. and the outperformance maybe of our economy and early recovery. The main thing we look at for currencies, though, one of the main things is interest rate differentials. And, you know, we were in an odd place over the past few years, probably 5 to 7 years, where, you know, the dollar was in U.S. interest rates were actually lower or higher than most of the rest of the world. So, you know, the interest rates, when the U.S. interest rates are higher, U.S. investments usually are risk-free. They're the cream of the crop. So usually the interest rates in the U.S. are a little lower than the rest of the world. But that changed. And with the Europe going negative interest rates and a lot of, you know, Japan going negative interest rates, we saw the U.S. interest rates higher, and that caused this dollar strength, and it caused a 5 or 6 years of dollar strength. That started to reverse last year. The mentality was U.S. was going to start, you know, keep rates lower for longer. We kept hearing Powell say lower for longer, lower for longer. The U.S. rates are going to stay down here, and the rest of the world starting to hike rates. I think we're going to get back to that thinking as the U.S. holds the line on interest rates. We're already starting to see, you know, Norway and some of the other Australia and New Zealand start talking about raising rates, even Canada. So as you see these other countries start raising interest rates, that interest rate differential is going to switch back to the foreign currency. So that is one of the things that I'm basing my thought that the dollar will start sliding again as you see those interest rate differentials start to change. So I think the dollar, you know, it's strong right now. And if we see of some of these risks that we talk about come back, I think you'll see safe haven flows. But again, in my opinion, you know, there's other markets that are going to start performing well as they come out of the pandemic, and that's going to help their currencies. So I think the dollar will start to decline again towards the end of the year.
Mike, can I admit something embarrassing?
Oh, absolutely.
I've asked Chris to define interest rate differentials at least 30 different times for me. And every single time I'm like, yep, I got it. But that was a really great explanation.
Oh, I was hoping for something really embarrassing, Vildana. Like,
this is embarrassing.
like you're wearing bell-bottom jeans or something. I don't know. That's
it's not just, if I can, it's not just straight interest rates. I mean, you know, you can go to Brazil and get, you know, some pretty high interest rates, but they have high inflation also. So you have to look at the real interest rate. You have to look at the difference between the nominal rate and inflation rate. And, you know, that's what really drives investors. So typically they're going to go for the, you know, there's the typical carry trade is where an investor goes for real interest rates that are higher, invest in the currency and you know, thinks that the currency is going to move higher and along with getting that positive carry on the interest rate.
Yeah, Chris, I wonder how noisy that potentially can get when you've got, you know, sort of the, if you were a believer in that these supply bottlenecks are a big part of the inflation story right now, you know, as it seems to me like maybe bottlenecks could start resolving in certain geographies and not others, you know, where are we going to have, say, transient inflation being a little bit longer in one spot than the other, you know, is that a risk that of sort of false signals being sent by inflation data that comes back to Earth in some places, spikes up again in others, but it all being sort of noise compared to what, you know, we can expect in the longer term?
Great point. And yeah, I agree with you. It can be very tough. You know, back to my previous comment about, you know, we're in unprecedented times. These supply bottlenecks, when you shut everything down, not everything can open up right away. And then, you know, shipping and you know, even opening some of the commodity mines, it's tough. But, you know, the inflation, I think, is transient. A lot of the inflation is transient. And I really liked Powell's explanation of what transient is. He was asked at his last press conference about transient. And it's not that the prices are going to go back down. We're not expecting prices to shift back down. They just won't keep increasing as quickly as we've seen. Now, you know, what could make inflation not transient is wage growth. If we see continued strong wage growth, that puts more money in consumers' pockets on a permanent basis. And that will lead to higher prices as demand comes back. So the supply bottlenecks, getting back to it, though, yes, absolutely. There's supply bottlenecks in certain sectors. And that's going to drive, obviously, when you cut supply, you know, and demand is still there, you're going to see swings in prices in order to alleviate that the difference. So I think it's tough to read. Again, the economic data is pretty tough. It can be really noisy. And, you know, I'm looking forward to when we get all this behind us and it starts getting back to normal, if you will.
You know, Chris, to educate Valdana on rate differentials, I'm gonna dig up some stories from the European debt crisis, Valdana, to show you how ridiculous it can get.
You know, that was fun times. I mean, when you had you know, but again, you know, the interest rates, I remember back in the European debt crisis, I think it was Greece or Italy had interest rates. They were just riding on the German backing, the implicit German guarantee of their debt. And their debt was trading well below U.S. debt at one point, which, again, drove the dollar higher because of that. You know, and when you could buy U.S. investments at a better real interest rate than Greece or Italy, it definitely moved the market.
Well, you look at some of those spreads back then, you know, double-digit percentages. It looked like it looked at the time like Europe was going to fail, that the Euro Union was going to fail completely. And it's remarkable to think where we are now compared to then. I mean, I guess it's just the magic of the ECB money printer to some degree. I mean,
they stabilized it. I mean, you go back to, you know, the Germans in the ECB. Boy, I just absolutely. It's not Lagarde. It was
Mario Draghi.
Draghi did a great job. You know, he was going to do anything he could to support the euro. You had the UK trying to leave at the time. So there's a lot going on those days. And it was volatile markets, very volatile markets. We saw some really wide swings in interest rates.
Whatever you send me, Mike, it can be my end of summer beach reading.
you'll have nightmares about but that was the driver of all markets at the time, was the spread between either Italian and German debt yields or Greek and Portugal and the German yields. We'll get you up to speed on that, Valdana. And then that's going to be the thing you worry about the most. I guarantee it.
I can't wait to read it.
It's funny how we just get past stuff like that too, though, isn't it? I mean, that is in the rearview mirror and nobody ever talks about it anymore. So it's kind of crazy how those, you know, situations that you think are going to be around, you know, and going to cause these dramatic swings that all of a sudden go away.
Yeah.
Well, I think that draggy posture of whatever it takes is, I think every central banker around the world wrote down those words in a notebook somewhere and said, that's the party line you got to take at times like last year.
Stand clear of the craziest things we saw in markets this week.
Chris, great stuff. Really appreciate all your insights. But now comes the big test for you. And that is, we got to hear the craziest thing you saw in markets this week. You're not allowed on the podcast unless you come with a crazy thing.
I've been in the business a long time. I go to a lot of investment conferences. And back in the day, there was an investment booth that was selling ostrich eggs. And it was back in the mid-90s. You can buy an ostrich egg, and they were encouraging people to become ostrich ranchers. And literally, ostrich eggs that were going for, I think, $15 a piece, all of a sudden shot up. I mean, it was just, everybody was getting into the market and they shot up to $3,000. This was back in the mid 90s, but then as everything does, like the tulip craze, it met a very dramatic end. And those $3,000 ostrich eggs, went back to 15 or $20. So it was a dramatic fall. Well, I just read an article where they're starting to come back. I guess people that, you know, were during COVID wanted new pets or wanted to find a way to make some extra money around the house. And so, especially in Texas where there's bigger ranching, we're seeing a lot of interest in the ostrich eggs. Unfortunately, I think it may end up the same way as before. But we're starting to see people, doctors and lawyers starting to try to flip ostriches.
This might be my favorite craziest thing in the history of crazy things.
Maybe ever.
I got to find the prices of the ostrich eggs. I don't think we have the ticker on the Bloomberg.
So I couldn't find it on Bloomberg.
So they're not exchanged.
What would be the ticker?
I don't know. We got.
Have you ever seen one? They're huge eggs. I mean, and this booth used to have them right there on. You know, they would show you what the ostrich egg looked like. But you know, they're used for meat and leather, and so there's some good uses. But I think they're pretty mean birds too. So
I was gonna say, yeah. Well, we got to find the data set on this. I need some price discovery on ostrich eggs. And yeah, I always thought they were pretty ornery birds. I don't know if I'd want one as a pet. And what do you get? You got to go out and sit on an ostrich egg yourself for a few days?
You got to go steal it. And then I guess you steal it from the bird and they don't like that, I don't think.
All right. This is fantastic. I got to look further into that. That is my kind of story right there, Viltana. Viltana, that's a hard one to follow, I got to say.
I know. That's a really good one. I'll admit it.
If he had a real time price quote for me, it would have been better. But we'll get that. We'll get that. I'll find a broker. I'll find a broker somewhere.
Yeah, that one was really. I can't really follow. I was gonna give us my favorite headline that I saw on the Bloomberg Terminal this week, which is about the garages that are being sold in New York City. So they're going for about $350,000 per parking spot for certain garages in the city, which is just crazy. But I was going to ask you, Mike, how you think that stacks up with the median price of single family homes, which is another number that came out this week.
Oh, which is higher?
Which is higher?
A parking space in Manhattan or a single family home? Man, that's a tough one. I know the single family home price has been going up. I'm gonna say the parking space at 350 is still a little higher than the median home price. Not much, but a little bit.
It's not. The median home price is slightly higher, but they're just about even. So the number that came out this week for the median home price is the prices rose something like 23%, which is another crazy story.
That is a crazy stat.
They rose to an all-time high of $357,000. So just slightly above the 350.
Wow. I didn't realize they had gone up that much. I knew they were in the 300s this year, but geez, that's
amazing. Do you really want a car in New York City, though? I guess just to get away on the weekends.
I would never want to drive in that city ever. I might buy one of those parking spots, and then I'll buy one of those tiny homes. You know, have you seen these things? And I'll park it in the parking spot, and I might end up with the nicest place in Manhattan with that. I don't know. What do you think, Valdana?
You can open up your I'm doing quotes, backyard for drinks and tapas. Yes. Or something like that. Yeah. Yes, we have lots of.
Yeah, I'm a Midwestern boy, so I was amazed one of my first trips to New York that I had never seen him stack cars, in these open parking lots. And I was like, what in the heck is that? And yeah, there were all these just parking condos, I guess it's, you know, and elevators up. And I thought that was just the wildest thing ever. But I guess there's huge demand.
That's amazing. $350,000 for a parking spot. I imagine you have to pay some monthly, you know, parking spot sweeping fee on top of that too. It's probably $1,000 a month, but
probably.
These are both pretty good. I'll give you mine. I think I might end up taking the bronze in this episode, but I'll give you mine. So that, as you know, I've been keeping a very close eye on AMC, the movie theater stock, just because talk about crazy things. And this week it reported earnings. The CEO obviously has really embraced the whole Reddit day trader crowd, which I think you have to if you're that guy. I mean, your company's going to win or fail based on what Reddit decides to do next. So on this conference call after the earnings, he decided to take questions from individual retail traders. I think he only took one question from an analyst and the rest were from, they call themselves the apes. You know, the AMC faithful are known as the apes. I think it's a reference to Planet of the Apes. So here's my question, my favorite question from one of the apes. And the executive, the CFO read out the question from a guy named Aaron, and it said, Aaron asks, and I promise this is not a sarcastic question, but can you guys make the AMC mascot officially a gorilla? And the response from the CEO, Adam Aaron, is just so priceless. You know, he's like, how do you answer these questions? You don't want to offend any of these guys. And he's like, well, it's an interesting question. I don't know. I don't think we're ready for a mascot, though. you said, we're going to watch what I'm doing with our marketing programs. And I think you'll be pleased with what AMC is going to do. But he wouldn't commit, Vildana, to making an ape the mascot, which I think might explain the drop in the stock price after the conference call. I don't know. I'm just saying.
Well, our Bloomberg opinion colleague, Matt Levine, had a hilarious column about this where he laid out a bunch of those questions. And honestly, I was laughing reading it. And you're right. The very last question, I believe, was from an analyst, and there was only one.
But it begs the question, do you think we need a mascot for the podcast?
Oh, definitely. Let's open it up to the Twitter.
How about an ostrich?
An ostrich.
There you go.
I think an ostrich is definitely in contention.
I can sell you one.
And if we get anything, Chris has got a deal for us. Bill Donnie, you're just going to have to sit on the egg in your apartment for a few months. You can do that, right? If I sit on it, I'll break the egg. I don't know. But
I have a feeling that they probably sit on their eggs for like years or something.
Yeah, probably.
I wouldn't doubt it.
The good thing is that if we get anything wrong, we can just bury our head in the ground and pretend it didn't happen. But all right, anyone on Twitter, call the hotline if you have a better mascot for us than an ostrich. But I think that's the lead. That's our lead mascot contender at the moment, for sure. So thanks for that, Chris. And we really appreciate your time on the show this week. Really insightful stuff. And hopefully we can get you back to do it again.
I look forward to it. I'd love to come back.
What Goes Up will be back next week. Until then, you can find us on the Bloomberg Terminal website and app, or wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love it if you took the time to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts so more listeners can find us. And you can find us on Twitter. Follow me at Reganonymous. Vildana Heyrich is at Vildana Heyrich. You can also follow Bloomberg Podcasts at Podcasts. And thank you to Charlie Pelt of Bloomberg Radio and the voice of the New York City subway system. What Goes Up is produced by Topher Forges. The head of Bloomberg Podcasts is Francesca Levy. Thanks for listening. See you next time.